Hey guys, it's Gabe from the Kids in the Pit podcast. Today I'm joined by Bill Muir, aka Sergeant Vegan from the band DFC. Thanks for letting me interview.
DFC stands for Death Follows Closely. I absolutely love bands that you have a full name and then you can kind of say it in a acronym way too. Vision of Disorder, one of my favorite bands, VOD, Stormtroopers of Death, SOD,
Yep. DRI. DRI
DRI,
Ninja
DFL, there. So, yeah, name the way it sounded, and Death Follows Closely. There's a whole story about how I've heard that name, but I thought it kind of, as a straight edge band, I thought it kind of had a straight edge connotation because part of what being straight edge is all about is trying to avoid unnecessary suffering and all the nonsense, and in my opinion, death cult of using drugs and drinking and smoking and all that just nonsense that the mainstream media, mainstream just thought in our country and unfortunately the world pushes on us, and with straight edge is basically one big pushback.
Yep. Like you said about the three letters name, me and my friends are starting like a thrash band called World of Chaos so we can be WOC.
Yeah.
Yep.
Walk. Or DFC. If I would, it's got, I guess it's kind of a shame that you can't, DFC, you have to say the letters and not, there's not just a catchy, Rage Against the Machine, that's like Rotem. That, I guess that's not as catchy, but.
Yeah. Yeah, so also my parents are straight edge and I am gonna be always straight edge. So, how many years have you been straight edge?
Well, we're coming up on, I went straight edge at 18 and now I'm 50. So now 32 years. It's kind of one of those things that unless you're like stay a hardcore kid and keep going to shows and keep interacting with people that are straight edge, or if you're not in a band, I think you just set it and forget it. Because I'm consciously like being in a band, especially straight edge band, talking to people about being straight edge, it's really big on my mind. Otherwise, it really only comes up if people at work are trying to get me to go out to a bar or something like that, and I'm like, nah, not really. And then I'll do some kind of like not explain it in a way that we would understand, but more just say like I'm not into that,
I
and
mean,
just
you could go out and like just drink orange juice or something.
yeah. I mean I'll do that too, but it, sometimes. You know, going to bars and hanging out like that. When I was lived in Japan, I would have to be around drunk people all the time, and it's just kind of a bummer. And then later in the military, if I'm around, a lot of hanging out in the military involves bars and other kind of nonsense like that. It just gets kind of old. It's not that I don't want to go hang out with people that are, not exactly like me. It's just I really have just about anything better to do than to be at a bar with people drinking.
Where in Japan did you live?
So I first lived in a place called Osaka, and I studied in Osaka for a year as an exchange student, and then I moved there, and I lived in Tokyo for 5 years. Japan's one of my favorite countries on earth, and the bless you. And the hardcore scene there is amazing. Truly was like awesome.
Yep. I went to Tokyo in January because so Sick of It All was playing. We love Sick of It All. And we also like found really cheap tickets, like $700 round trip to Japan from Los Angeles. So we just flew to Los Angeles for cheap. But yeah, we went to Tokyo and it was amazing and saw Sick of It All twice.
Do you remember where you saw them?
So the first place was Unit. Know the unit. And then there was the anti-knock.
Antioch? Yeah.
Yeah, that place is really cool. It's like, I don't know. It's there, I mean, there's definitely some places in, I mean, so have you ever you said you lived in Philly, right? I assume you went to Underground Arts then, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little tiny, it's like a little place.
Might not be that old. I don't know how old it is.
But it's a really, really cool place. But I feel like the Antinok, like it's the Japanese version of that place. Like they're very similar in my opinion.
Let's see, places in Philly, and where would I see a show in Philly? There was a place called the Stalag back in the day that I don't know if we had an equivalent in Japan because Stalag was a squat. I know there's a, I haven't seen a show there in a couple years. Yeah, not to plug someone else's band, but my brother's band just played a show at the Polish Club there a couple months ago.
Nice. But yeah, you've been to the First Unitarian Church, right? Right. What band? Okay. Off topic now for something
All
like
right.
what? So what band is your brother in?
So my brother sings in a band called All Else Failed.
I interviewed
Steve.
Steve.
Yeah, I think I after we had already connected, I think I then remembered that had happened, which Steve is amazing and one of the three founding members of All Else Failed. Yeah, All Else Failed as because it's my brother has always been like a huge part of my, I guess, the interface with the whole hardcore scene and the hardcore experience.
So how long ago was that interview?
Probably a year.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty nice. It was a cool interview.
Well, I had hope he was. I mean, that'd be well, I guess I haven't met every musician, but most of the time when I would meet people, I mean, usually everyone should be on your best behavior. But when you're interviewing them, I mean, I would hope they would be nice to you. That would be.
Yeah, I just mean he was just like really nice.
Extra nice.
Yeah, extra nice.
Yeah.
He had some added nice on the side.
With a side of nice. Yeah, those guys. So I think most of the people in hardcore bands, I think if you saw them on stage and they're jumping around and acting crazy, I mean, it's like an act. But, I mean, it's literally a performance, and there's a little less of a performance in that we don't dress up like you had mentioned Slipknot, where and some of those bands, and like 80s hair metal, where they're doing their hair and makeup and stuff like that. Like,
Like Kiss and
yeah, like it's that much of a performance. Us, we wear what we would normally wear, and
yeah, just band t-shirt and who cares if they don't like it.
pretty much that, but. It's still a performance. You're maybe acting angry or crazy where, you got to make it look more interesting, but you're not a crazy person or angry. And even though All Has Failed, their live set is supposed to be really energetic and stuff like that, it doesn't mean any of those guys are mean. And even like, I'm just thinking of a band, Bad Luck 13, that had a crazy reputation. If you met those people outside of playing a set, they were all super nice guys. At least the main singer, Jay Goldberg, was or is.
So, what do you do in DFC?
So following in my brother's footsteps, I am the vocalist.
Nice. Like, what kind of vocals, like, do you like?
What kind of vocal style what do I have? Maybe some screaming and angry muttering. I would say like that, kind of like a. I would, if I had to describe myself, it would be like terror, hate breedish, that kind of thing. I know that knocked loose vocal style is popular with some people. I don't do that, and I don't, and kind of it's not my thing.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Hatebreed. I've seen them like a ton of times,
Yeah.
probably at least like five. Yeah, I've gone to a lot of hybrid shows. They're really like, yeah, just whenever that we're in the area, we make sure to see them because they're awesome.
What Hatebreed album do you like the most?
Okay, so I don't like the new stuff that much because it's more like just like metal. I like my favorite albums, it's hard to say, but first four albums, so Under the Knife, then Satisfaction, then Perseverance, and Rise of Brutality. But out of those, it would probably be Satisfaction.
Yeah, me too. That it, and I listened to that when it came out, which now seems a million years ago, but it was everything after that. I mean, it's really hard to kind of improve on that. I think that was kind of the pinnacle of, I know metalcore has become something else, but a perfect blend of metal and hardcore, like basically Slayer without all the solos. And just the breakdowns, it truly was something amazing. And Rise of Brutality and Perseverance to some extent were extensions of that. And then after that, it's kind of hard to, reinvent the wheel.
I like that they did like the covers of a ton of like hardcore and punk bands. That I think it's like For the Lions or something. I know they did like Sick of It All. They did I know they did a Misfits cover, which is probably what they're named after because the song Hate Breeders.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a good chance that they might be named after that.
Percent they were, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. But yeah, there are a lot of cool bands on there.
Hatebreed has definitely been an influence. I think if pretty much any band in heavy music, Hatebreed has been an influence in one way or and there's really no getting around them. They've been a juggernaut in this field.
Yep. Also, Jamie Josta said he'll try to do my podcast. He's just really hard to like get to do it. He's just really busy, right? Hatebreed's pretty big.
Oh, I mean, they are huge. Just the fact that he said that he would, or him or whoever his handler is, that's a huge thing. And I mean, he seems like a pretty solid guy, and that's awesome,
They're probably the biggest like hardcore bands. Well, no, probably Turnstile for the two.
I would give it to Hatebreed only in that. So Turnstile, I love Turnstile, and I'm really stoked to finally get to see them. But I think Hatebreed is bigger because Turnstile until Glow On wasn't really on most people's radar, other than outside our scene, or maybe, if you were maybe some alt kids might have been into it. But I think that one album obviously, blew them up.
Yep.
So, whereas Hatebreed, I mean, they've been huge for like literal decades, and and good on them.
So I'd say in general, Hatebreed is bigger, but like right now, Turnstile is definitely like more hyped, right?
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Like currently, they're probably bigger, but they're not like bigger, if that makes sense.
You might have a point there. Turnstile might have more mainstream appeal, and like I can't see Hatebreed going on, I don't know, late night with Seth Meyers or something like that, whereas I could see Turnstile easily doing that.
But
And
yeah, like you saw how Turnstile was on like a Taco Bell commercial, right?
yeah,
Like I
I
don't think
mean,
it's gonna be on that. Also, because I don't think Taco Bell will have like heavy music on there. I mean, Turnstile is like kind of heavy, but like
yeah, Turnstile has more mainstream crossover appeal. I can't, I wouldn't, I think Hatebreed does not, which is kind of the appeal to Hatebreed. I mean, they literally have a name too that's going to be a red flag for the normies. So, whereas Turnstile, I could see, you don't immediately know what the name means. So then you're like, again, good on those guys too. Are you a fan of Angel Dust? They're
so
their brother or sister band?
I'm not sure if I've ever listened to them, but I've definitely like heard the name.
They're basically like if you had a hardcore band that covered the Beatles, is what I like to think of it. So it's like catchy, it's a little more straightforward and a little less heavy in parts than Turnstile, but because it's the guy, one of the guys from Trapped Under Ice, it's basically when you see them live, it's like catchy, but even but very heavy. But it's something new and different in that they're purposely trying to be like Lemonheads or some kind of like poppy thing, but also like super heavy at the same time sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, so what year did DFC start?
So thank you very much for that question. DFC started 2 years ago. It was me, a guy named Josh, and a guy named Mikhail. I think I met Josh through Facebook. I had put a Facebook ad up, and then Mikhail, I was looking through Craigslist, and he had on a Craigslist ad that he was looking for people to start a band, and it kind of sort of, but not really mentioned not being into drugs and drinking, like kind of put some like wasn't straight edge exactly, but like straight edge adjacent comment. And I was like, ooh, let me talk to this guy. And yes, it turns out that he was straight edge as well. And took us a while, but we finally got an EP put together and then sent it to Scott from Earth Crisis. He produced it and we put it out last year in August. So then we've been playing shows this year and I'm hoping to play more and more shows. Because really, it's about shows and it's about putting out music. Shows are the main thing. We started it specifically because I miss playing shows. I miss being in bands and, you know, just having that fun.
Yep. So, where's your friend Bum? Where's your band from? And do you all still live there?
So we're an LA band, but I think only one of the guys is actually from LA. Our bassist Sky is from Long Beach. I'm from Philly. Josh is originally from New York. Mikhail, where's Mikhail from? For some reason, it escapes me, but he's not from here either. And Tristan, our drummer, sorry, Tristan, I can't remember, but I don't think he's originally from LA either. But we're an LA band. Kind of like how Terror, I think Scott came from is from Buffalo, or now H2O. I think some of the guys are you know based here in LA, but they're a New York band. I mean,
So what type of band is Terror Edge? Like what, where are they from?
what genre? So Terror, at least Scott Vogel is from New York, so their Terror is I mean, it's what I would just call a hardcore band. I'm sure years ago we would have called it new school because to differentiate between like youth of today and stuff like that.
Terror's from California, right?
Terror is a California band, but I don't think any of the guys are from California originally. And that's, you know, when people say, where are you from? You know, it all depends on, like, I guess the viewpoint of the person asking the question. Like, you know, I could say I'm from America and that's right, but if I'm talking to another American, then that doesn't make sense as an answer. If someone's asked me where I'm from, they could be meaning like, where are you from? Like a rig before LA, because I've lived in LA for 10 years now. And then I would say Philly, because I grew up in Philly, but I'm still very connected to Philadelphia, but I guess I don't consider myself an LA person, but I mean, this is where I live.
Nice. We live like an hour south of Philly. We're in Middletown, Delaware.
Tax free, right?
Yeah, I will. Yeah, just sales tax, not other
Oh man.
taxes. It's
That
nice.
is amazing, but I'm sure there's Sure, there's pluses and minuses to living everywhere. I think there's probably some places where there's no pluses, it's all minuses, but Philly, Delaware, a lot of the places that I've been to on the East Coast, lots of pluses to live there. California, lots of negatives, but the weather is amazing most of the time. And then we have the beach.
So a funny story about California. We have some friends that live there, and when we I said I went to Japan earlier, we had and we went to California. We just stayed overnight in the airport the first time, but on our way back, we went to like explore California with one of our friends that lives there, and he just showed us around. And then, of course, the day that the one day we're in California. Reply starts raining like
Yeah, it's weird.
days out of
This
the
has been, probably due to climate change, but I'm not r really sure on the day to day. It's been rainier than normal here. Usually we're in a drought, but lately it's been raining a lot. So it's weird that you came on a rainy day, but I'm looking outside the window. It's overcast, and I don't know. Maybe it's like that just to spite me. I don't know. But usually it's sunny here.
But like I feel like when California, like whenever it rains, like everything is just out, everything closes.
Yeah.
Because like Venice Beach was closed, all the shops were closed, like
The beach wasn't closed, but the shops were.
well yeah, I mean like there was no one at Venice Beach, but all the and all the shops at like Venice Beach were closed. It was crazy.
When I think of Venice Beach, I think of suicidal tendencies. And at least as a kid, that's what I would have thought of. And then now I just think it's kind of like it's like somewhere between like a homeless Mecca and gentrified. It's a weird thing.
Yep.
I'm
Also, you share the same name at you sh share the same last name as the
Mike,
singer of t Suicidal Mike Muir. Wait, is it spelled the same way?
Spelled the same way. Yeah. I'm not sure if we're related, but I would love to think so because I mean, he's a great singer and I think he did so much to bring our type of music to the masses and
Yep.
definitely blew up hardcore and skate punk and wow, it's just an amazing. I would have loved to have been here for that.
Yep. Also, here's my Mike Muir impression. Like
All right.
when is live, like he does the like hand thing. You know how he'll like move back and forth like this. Almost like two-stepping without your legs. Here, a little bit.
So I've never been able to get to see them. There were a couple times I almost went. I think when I was in Japan, I have a lot of almost, but almost saw them, but I think I had to go home instead. But they're playing this basically the punk rock Coachella in July or no, June. Called No Values Fest, and I'm finally going to get to see them along with a whole bunch of other bands. It's going to be amazing. Probably actually going to be more annoying than amazing, like those gigantic shows where there's like 50 bands playing and 50,000 people are usually really, really, really annoying. There's just always, something that sucks about it, but I'm sure the memory of it and those moments where you finally seeing a band that you wanted to see for so freaking long, it's going to be awesome. And like little bands that I haven't liked for years or even thought about, like Dead Milkmen are playing, so to get to start with seeing Dead Milkmen and end with like the Misfits playing, it's just going to be like
Pretty
too
cool.
awesome.
For like for Suicidal Tendencies, like the only album I really know is the first one. Like it's self-titled, right? Yeah. Yeah, but
Lights, Camera, Revolution is also worth a listen.
yeah, I've checked it out. So I like it, I just don't like it as much as the original.
That's fair.
But I know it's a long time.
Usually people I mean, even the most of the best musicians only have a couple really good albums in them, and you know, if they stay around longer than that, it fizzles out. And usually the first thing people put out is, you know, something that they've been holding inside for so long, and it's their best. And then, you know, usually by the third or fourth, as we were talking about Hatebreed, it's why, you know, they've been around for so long, it's kind of hard to kind of come up with something new to say and a new way to say it. So, usually the first couple albums are the best. Only, you know, only the most awesome musicians are able to kind of keep coming up with something new and exciting.
So yeah, have you been in any other bands?
I was in a band called Till I Die in Japan. We're briefly mentioned in there's a couple different there's a straight edge, not encyclopedia straight edge, but some straight edge book that briefly mentions us. We were around late 90s to early 2000s, and that I'm my hope with DFC is that DFC is kind of a continuation with my trying to push the straight edge agenda with Till I Die, but kind of a musical perfection of what I was trying to do with Till I Die, because it with Till I Die was it was with all Japanese members, and my Japanese was okay then, but trying to write music when in your second language is kind of difficult.
Yep.
Trying to communicate, and especially not being, I would say I'm in bands, but I'm kind of like a musician, but I don't play an instrument. So me having an idea of how a part should sound, it's easier with two other people who really understand what we're trying to do. That being Until I Die led me to being on the Final Fantasy X soundtrack, and you know, being on that video game, and it sold, I don't know, 14 million copies or something like that.
Pretty cool.
It was awesome, but because of the timing, because I 9/11 happened right after that came out, and then I left Japan. The band broke up. I joined the military and went in a completely different direction. I'd always thought, you know, I really miss that part of my life, and I really miss being in a band, and miss making music. And I don't know, all these years after that, it's really feel very lucky to be able to get back to doing that and being able to still have a voice in the hardcore scene.
I mean, the only Japanese I know is arigato and konnichiwa.
Two very important words. I think if you're going to only know two words, then it might as well be that.
Yeah, probably.
So you nailed it.
So, what was the first punk or hardcore show you attended, and how old were you?
Ooh, this is a good question. I know I went to see Metallica for the Injustice for All tour, and I would have been, I don't know if I was 16. I might have been 15 for that, maybe 14. Let me see. I know when I was, so I got into this type of music through, of all bands, I think Maiden. I think, well, if I go back earlier than that, I think I had liked, when I was your age, I really, really liked horror movies for some reason. And I bought the soundtrack to like Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. And then I started listening to those bands, which were kind of crappy hair bands like Dokken. And I think I had gone to a record store to get another Dokken tape, which Dokken, I mean, it's goofy hair metal, but when you're a kid, you're first getting into everything. You don't know, you don't really know what you're doing. And then I got a hold of a Maiden album because of the cover. I thought the Iron Maiden cover looked really cool. And then I started listening to Maiden, and a kid at school said, "Hey, if you like Maiden, you should listen to Metallica." And I think Metallica was my real final gateway into listening to metal. And then because Metallica had covered Misfits, I got into Misfits. And then by somewhere in high school, I was listening to Sick of It All and stuff like that. So let me see. I would say, I wouldn't say my first show was seeing Bad Brains and Slapshot, but that was like a big moment. And I was kind of older at that point. I think I was 18 when I saw them. Until then, I had just seen mostly local bands, like thrash bands. There was a circus tent, like a Chuck E. Cheese, but like a knockoff Chuck E. Cheese where I'm from, called Circus Town, which it's as awful as it sounds, but they would, because they didn't, it was obviously very unpopular. They would let local bands play, and they would be like a metal night. And this was in like the late 80s, I think. And so I would go to see like probably really bad thrash bands, and it was still awesome for what it was. And then let me see, what other stuff?
I mean, I feel like Metallica was most people's gateways,
Oh
right?
yeah, especially and that would have been Master Puppets, which is, wow, that album was just so amazing and so groundbreaking that I think almost no matter who you are, it's it's just a super special thing.
So besides singing in a band, you were also an author. You're also an author, right?
Yes, sir.
Nice. So what are your books called and what are they about?
So conveniently, I have it behind me, but my first book was called Vegan Strong. My idea behind Vegan Strong was that I wanted to kind of de-hippify, meaning take all the hippie propaganda out of talking about veganism, because I think often when people talk about issues, whether it's veganism or politics or sexism, whatever, there's often a lot of stuff that come with it, a lot of baggage. And I think, and when I wrote the book, one of the thoughts that I had was the thing that's holding people back from embracing veganism and talking about how, we need to do better by the environment and how animal agriculture is, destroying our world in many ways. And as a healthcare professional, cardiovascular risk is one of the biggest health challenges that people have, and that is very linked with the standard American diet. Well, the thing that was holding people back from grasping that message was that they looked at hippies and or vegans, and they thought they were a bunch of stinking hippies. And I thought if I could just take away the hippie nonsense from the vegan message, most people are going to say, if you ask, hey, do you think we should be kind to animals? Most people will say yes. People that abuse animals, or if you see someone kicking a dog, I would say 9 out of 10 people are going to say that guy sucks. If you say, hey, should we be healthy? Most people will say yeah. And if you say, do you care about the environment? Most people will say yes. But then it's not until you add the politics, and then someone says, especially me as a punk rock kid, I didn't get along with hippies and the whole tie-dye patchouli thing. It just annoyed me. So I thought if we get rid of all that propaganda and nonsense, it would be cool. And that's what Vegan Strong is. I thought the least hippie thing that I could tie veganism to would be the military and being coming from a military background. Thought I would write a vegan book like an army field manual and be something that people haven't seen before. Then behind me in the middle, I wrote a kid's book called The Adventures of Sergeant Piggy, because veganism often, I saw a couple of vegan books for kids, but they were like weepy, sad stuff. And when you're a kid, the world is an awesome place. I mean, honestly, the world is an awesome place for everyone, but the world is everything good and bad. But there's really no reason to just be given a sob story to kids, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know about saying it's irresponsible, but it's just kind of like, it kind of sucks. And seeing just sad books that are meant to make you sad, when I mean, being vegan and just being alive is awesome. I mean, that's the way to go. And finally, I wrote a book called Dead Meat, which I thought it would be kind of fun to write a book explaining veganism, but like basically like a horror movie, as a fan of action and horror. And I think Dead Meat kind of, if reads like an embodiment of a Slayer song, but about the animal ag, meat and dairy industry.
Nice. So have there's this like kind of like there's this person, she like posts on YouTube and stuff.
All right.
And have you ever heard of her? Her name is That Vegan Teacher.
I've heard the name, yeah.
So like it's awesome when people are vegan, but like she like forces it onto people, which is like gives it a bad name sometimes.
I don't know if veganism is actually forced on anyone. Most of us are indoctrinated into the standard American diet.
Yeah.
And that's literally forced on us. Because, I mean, we're all, raised a certain way to think, it's kind of like it's kind of like religion or anything else. You're raised in it, you're kind of just in this fishbowl of always hearing about it. We turn on the TV, meat, real food for real people, McDonald's commercials. There's really no forcing veganism on anyone. Vegans can be preachy and annoying because if you're really into something, it's hard to not be preachy and annoying about it. Just talk to some people who are really religious. Nothing, no need to go into religion, but they're really into it and it's hard for them to not be annoying about it. And
I mean,
if,
like, so what I mean is she like doesn't force it, but she like calls people like horrible people for not doing it. And she says like she, yeah, she's kind
well,
of crazy.
one of the things about, so I don't know anything really about the vegan teacher that I've heard of. I mean, one of the things about doing anything like being in the hardcore for so long or, being vegan for so long or whatever is that, I mean, even if she's been around for 10 years, that's nothing compared to the amount of time up, you know what I mean? So you just don't, it doesn't even pop on you up on your radar because you just don't care. But I think, to be fair to that person and not knowing anything about them, generally speaking, sensationalism gets in people's heads more than just explaining something normally and, having a conversation. Sensationalism, meaning the fact that you know who this person is and you're bringing them up, means that she somehow got to you or kind of was able to convey her message better than if I'm just like, hey, killing animals sucks. If most people would say that it's wrong to kick a dog. And I would say I haven't met many people who would say otherwise.
Yeah.
Though when I was in the military, I knew people who would kill dogs for fun because you're in a war environment, you're killing people too. So maybe as a vegan, maybe I'm the weird one to say that it's wrong to kill a dog for fun.
And
So,
that's not
but
okay.
the reason why I bring this up is because morality and is situational sometimes and it's subjective and I remember I was remember we were in a active con stuff was going on and my lieutenant asked me why I don't eat honey, and so I started explaining why vegans don't eat honey, and he said, we're killing people over there, like we're murdering, and I just said we're doing it for the bees, man. So I think at the end of the day, everything you have to kind of like be able to kind of not take yourself too seriously, and not knowing anything about vegan teacher, but if I, but I do know have met many vegans, and I do know that taking yourself too seriously kind of sucks. Whether it's music, whether it's like your job, whether it's really any whether it's your if you write books, if you take yourself too seriously, it kind of sucks. And often when people meet vegans and they take it too seriously and they can't just admit that, hey, I mean, at the end of the day, I guess nothing matters, and we're all gonna die anyway. And when you can't like laugh at yourself, then it's kind of like it's kind of hard to handle that. It's kind of annoying. So maybe that's a fault of them. But I mean, on the other side, if the fact that they get popular and people know about them Maybe they're doing something right, at least with their messaging, that's being able to get their message out, you know? I don't know. I don't like name calling or making people feel bad. Like I clip that I just put up recently is I don't like making people feel bad for eating meat. I like people making people feel good for choosing something that's, more healthy or better for the environment, different side of the same coin, try to reinforce good behavior. It's kind of like being straight edge. It's not so much that I want to talk shit on everyone that's not straight edge. It's more that, hey, I want to talk about how good it is to, live a, drug-free, alcohol-free, tobacco-free, just, free of all that extra nonsense life, and that there's just so much out there. But not necessarily, I need to like knock every beer out of everyone's hand. That's not positive for our movement or for generally humanity,
I mean, so we do get like a lot of our meat from like a local farm, like near us, where the animals are like treated like really well, and then like I guess
The pigs are
kill.
forest raised.
They get to like hang out in forests and stuff. It's really cool.
The pigs live in the forest, apparently.
Yeah, and like they get like killed really humanely, but like it's yeah. It's like way better than like those big warehouses and stuff. Right?
Well, I don't know about that. I think that might be some fairy tales, but I probably disagree with the concept that there's a nice way to kill anyone. Again, getting back to that, the person that kicks dogs for fun, I mean, or whatever. I don't think we need it. I think things, if we're gonna just talk veganism, I think things were different 100 years ago, where there was not, even like when I went vegan in the 90s, there weren't that many viable options of other things to eat. So when I first got into Earth Crisis, I went vegan before Earth Crisis. As you can see, I'm wearing an Earth Crisis shirt, but I went vegan before listening to them. But to be fair to people who listened to Earth Crisis's message and heard us talk about, that whole Morrissey meat is murder nonsense, they could say, okay, now I heard what you said, want to go vegan. If you had tried to do that in the 90s, there was no Beyond Meat. There was no Impossible Burger. There was no Chicago Soy Dairy. There was no, all of these companies that have an infrastructure to make stuff that doesn't have animal products in it. You'd literally be eating a block of tofu. Or like me, I've eaten a PBJ for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I could get how people would not be into that. I could get that people would just, they would have to say, like, well, you know what, man? I mean, what can you do? I'm not going to eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day. But I would say there's so many products that don't have an animal in it. Just don't put an animal in it. I guess that's my quote of the day. Just don't put an animal in it.
Like, I'm definitely not opposed to being vegan. That's like an awesome concept. Like, I may be when I'm older, but currently I'm not, but it's definitely an awesome, like, thing.
I don't necessarily think that veganism needs to be something that's being pushed on. At this, I consider it to be a stages in where we're at. And when I was your age, I would not have known the word vegan because it was not in popular lexicon at all. Nobody had that word out there. Now the fact that, most people know what that word means, I think is amazing. So I guess where I'm going with this as, I think the future of veganism is different where the present is. The present is, I think, widespread understanding and normalization, and I think we're still getting there. So I think that, every now and again, have something like, if you were going to have a burger, have a vegan burger instead, and leave it at that. I think that's amazing. Instead of making it something where, when you push stuff on people, I think that kind of sucks. I think you would agree with that, and most people would. And it's better when the people, come to it on their own realization, And, sometimes vegan straight edge bands, and sometimes, vegan YouTubers like you were mentioning a vegan teacher, it could come off preachy and annoying. And at the end of the day, preachy and annoying, you know, even if it's something that I really agree on, is wrong. I remember hanging out with some activists and they were doing something like they were going into restaurants and yelling at people.
Yeah, that
Like,
shouldn't do
I
that.
completely understand where they're coming from in that, again, 90% of people, if it was a dog, would say, oh, you can't kick that dog. And then when I, you know, there's a video online where there's, you know, a dog trapped in a hot car and people think it's okay to take a brick and break the window. Okay. I mean, I'm with you on that. But then you're going to give someone money to kill a cow or whatever. Like that just doesn't, it doesn't compute. Like I know that everybody has to take their, you know, figure out where they stand on stuff, but I think consistency is it's worth more than anything. And I again that that analogy in when we're talking the military where people were abusing dogs, like one of my friends, I think his hobby, and I wasn't around for it, but his hobby was fishing for dogs, which you could probably figure out what that is, but and nothing ethical or nice about it. It just completely creepy. But how much different is that than other things that people do that are condoned in American society, especially around animal agriculture? I don't think it's any different.
Yeah.
And that guy, even though that guy was doing some stuff that I think is creepily awful, if we're going to talk how different is it than you know hunting, zero different. Am I going to go talk shit on hunters? No. Like, do I think people need to hunt anything in this day and age? Kind of. I think H2O has a song, Riper, is there, no, Forest King. I would agree. Like, 100 years ago, very, very necessary. Now the only thing anyone has to do is go down to their local supermarket, like, and hunt for a good deal, you know? But okay, I mean, I have friends who hunt, and I'm not gonna say anything because I guess whatever. I mean, they already know how I feel about it, so you know, harassing them doesn't help.
Yep. So if you could tell your 12-year-old self anything at all, what would you tell him?
Have more fun. Honestly, I think that's the biggest thing that I would tell my 12-year-old self. I think growing up, I know every generation likes to think that they had it the hardest, and every generation likes to think that their time as a kid was either the hardest or the best or something like that. And but I think that growing up and finding yourself is always a difficult thing. I think adolescence is hard because it's meant to be hard. And if it's easy, if anything is easy, it's usually not worth doing, maybe. But I think having more fun and realizing that everything would work out, if I could kind of like go back in time and use a time machine. I mean, there's lots of things that I would use the time machine for, but the first one would be like I'd stop at my 12-year-old self. I would give them maybe like maybe the first minor threat, sick of it all. Maybe I would give them a Hatebreed album and say like, hey, have more fun. Don't worry so much. Like, you know, definitely get into straight edge and you know become vegan straight edge earlier and enjoy life because I think kids from every generation but I think with social media and stuff like that kids worry more and there seems to be more anxiety nowadays than there was when I grew up and I think a lot of that is because social media makes this kind of echo chamber this churning echo chamber where everyone thinks things are worse than they might actually be. And yeah, that's the main thing. Because life is short, and if you're not having fun and enjoying yourself, at the end of the day, what was it all about, you know?
Anything to add before you wrap it up?
Anything to add? Well, that would be about it. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I love talking about hardcore, and keep up the good work, and I'm excited to hear more things about your band.
Thanks. Yeah, so thanks to Bill for joining me today, and thanks to all you watching and listening. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel or follow me on Spotify and other streaming platforms. Until next week, bye.